Stay tuned for one of the most unusual and fascinating hours you'll ever hear. The subject is UFOs. Welcome to the Paranet UFO Continuum, a one-hour program dedicated to a very strange phenomena, unidentified flying objects. Whether or not you believe UFOs exist, the controversy is real, and this program will try to get to the bottom of it. Your host is Michael Corbin, director of Paranet Information Services, a global communications network based near Denver, Colorado, dedicated to the investigation of UFOs. We invite you to keep an open mind as we discuss one of the most fascinating and strange subjects in the world. Here's your host, Michael Corbin.
Are there artificial structures on the moon? That is the subject of tonight's edition of the Paranet UFO Continuum. My guest is going to tell us later this hour that there possibly is something very highly unusual up there, and it might be connected to Mars. However, one thing I want to say is that tonight we did have scheduled Richard Hoagland, but due to a family emergency, Richard could not be with us this evening. So our guest tonight is going to be Dr. Bruce Cornett. He's a geologist and paleontologist who has worked with Richard Hoagland and has published a paper that appeared on the Paranet Information Services Network, among other electronic media, dealing with the photographs. And it's going to be a very interesting segment tonight. He's going to tell us about the good possibility that something is up there. But I myself am not convinced. I think maybe this might be bunk, but I'm going to have to be convinced about this. But what's important is this week, the 25th anniversary of the Apollo landing took place, July 20th, 1969. There's been a plethora of theories about the moon. As many of you may know, there's numerous people out there, including the Flat Earth Society, who's gotten a lot of media attention with the anniversary of the moon landing, who says that O.J. Simpson is being prosecuted because of his involvement in Capricorn 1. The Flat Earth Society claims that the moon landing never took place. And, of course, we've got others who say that there are alien bases on the moon and all kinds of other wild, weird stuff going on up there. But, again, I'm not convinced. But, again, Dr. Cornett has got some pretty interesting things to say, and his background is quite interesting. So we're going to get onto that in a little bit. First, we're going to take our San Luis Valley update with Chris O'Brien. Chris, are you there?
Hi, Michael.
How you doing?
Very good.
I understand that there was actually a mysterious cattle death today.
Well, it was discovered this morning.
Okay.
It probably happened about 2 days ago. Belonged to the same rancher who's been repeatedly hit by the mutilation teams or the cattle surgeons, if you will. He's lost now 11 heads since September, and he's in the Raton Eagle's Nest area of northern New Mexico, just over the south end of the valley here.
Okay, and for those listeners out there, the mysterious San Luis Valley is in southern Colorado, and Chris is a correspondent and a reporter and an investigator down in that area, and has done a considerable amount of research into, what could be termed the whole enchilada of the UFO and the strange,
you name it,
the
it's
paranormal
on here.
any kind of indication as to what could have caused this, or what are the circumstances?
Well, the investigators that are working with Eli, along with myself, Gil Stalen and Gene Neary, are down in the area. They're working also with Linda Moulton Howe, who evidently has been the recipient of a research grant that will enable pathologists and vets in specific geographic areas to actually get to the location as quickly as possible. And this is real important, obviously, because to get proper forensic and postmortem samples for lab investigation and stuff, you got to be on site as quickly as possible.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
We're madly scrambling to get some of the professionals that have shown an interest, and there aren't many that have shown an interest in this whole aspect of what goes on here in the San Luis Valley and elsewhere, to get them down there on site so that we can do a proper lab analysis of tissue samples.
I'm just curious, Chris, when you speak about the lack of interest on the part of professional people to look at the samples and everything, I understood that Dr. Altshuler had recently sent out several letters to veterinarians around the country asking for their cooperation. Was there, do you know if there was a good response to that?
Well, I haven't actually talked to John about that specific letter and about the efforts that he and Linda Howe have undertaken to try to get some real legitimate scientific inquiry going here. John Altshuler is quite a pioneer in his own right, and he and Linda, with their combined efforts and the efforts of other researchers and investigators like myself, have actually determined that out of 40 cases that they've looked at, high heat has been used to create the incision wounds often found on, you know, on animals. And this is, I think, very important because, as most of your listeners know, coyotes don't have 200-degree breath, and we're not dealing with scavengers.
I sure wouldn't want to run against one of those.
We are dealing with a real phenomenon that, does
technology,
have high technology involved with it.
Is there any theories as to what, and I heard that there's been information released about a handheld laser that could be carried out, battery-operated even?
Yeah, from what I understand, that would in no way be powerful enough to do the kinds of surgery work that we're seeing in the field. Something like that would take quite a bit of time to get through tough cowhide. Whereas the kinds of, you know, evidence that I believe is out there and from the past in the 70s as well indicates that we're dealing with something a lot more high-powered than a little portable laser pack.
Now, the mysterious San Luis Valley, as you've coined it, what other features have you noted down there? You mentioned earlier that you had everything.
Well, we've had, in the past 6 months, we've had incredible fireball sightings, daylight sphere and disc sightings, 7 reports of Bigfoot, including videotape, incredible amounts of military activity, which at the height of it, they'd sent our National Guard in the valley out of state and brought in somebody else, or a convoy zipping all over the place here. We've had, it's amazing that normally in the past, June and July have been very, and I mentioned this on your program a couple, 3 weeks ago, that normally the summer months we see a decline in activity. And of course, as soon as I mention some sort of perceived pattern, of course, they throw everything but the kitchen sink at me. We've had the first 2 weeks of July, we had events almost every day, including some really intriguing daylight sightings that I'm still, hard at work trying to get all the facts on.
Okay.
We also had our, up in the Denver area there, you remember on July 13th, we had a very, very large series of sonic booms that were felt, you know, all the way down here, almost 200 miles away, which they, you know, NORAD said was a secret classified SR-71 Blackbird flight for NASA. I do have some indication that many of those SR-71s may have been grounded, if not all of them, at that on that day. I'm still working
on
that.
So we might be dealing with another bogus
yes, exactly.
Answer or explanation. Chris, give our listeners your address so they can get a hold of you.
Okay. I publish a bi-monthly newsletter. If you're interested in some of the goings-ons here, grab a pen. It's the Mysterious Valley, P.O. Box 223. That's 223 Crestone, Crestone, Colorado, 81131.
Okay, very good. We'll catch you next week.
Okay, very good, Michael.
Okay, Chris, thank you.
Have a good show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, when we come back from a break, we're going to talk about the 5 principles of ufology. And when you think that there might not be any hope for what this might be, despite the fact that I myself am skeptical, you want to be sure and stay tuned for the next segment of the Paranet UFO Continuum. So we'll be back in just a moment after a break. I'm Michael Corbin. Sit tight, and we'll see you in a few minutes on the other side.
Astronomically sensational. That's what you'll say when you see the catalog of outstanding space-related games, books, globes, posters, photos, videotapes, computer software, and CD-ROMs from Cosmic Productions. Explore the wonders of the universe with Epic 2000, a Windows program featuring an advanced planetarium with thousands of stars that lets you generate your own star maps and even control a remote telescope. Or try the Redshift CD-ROM for Macs or Windows, a fabulous simulation package that can let you navigate the Moon, Mars, or Earth with stunning realism. You'll feel like you're there. And there's much, much more. For an 18-page catalog, send $2 to Cosmic Productions. Box 1489, New Waverly, Texas, 77358. Cosmic Productions, your cosmic connection. At Box 1489, New Waverly, Texas, 77358. Or call area 409-291-7441.
Paranet Information Services is your electronic window on the world of UFOs, accessible by computer and modem. Paranet keeps you up to date on the world pulse of ufology, with sighting reports, interesting findings, and general discussion on the mysterious UFO enigma. Paranet features one of the most comprehensive text file libraries in the world on the paranormal, available for a small online fee. So plug into power and knowledge through Paranet. The VBS number is available 24 hours a day. Call the data line at area 303-429-2713. That's 303-429-2713. Or for more information, contact Paranet Information Services at area 303-429-2654. That's 303-429-2654. You're listening to one of the most unusual programs you'll ever hear. It's the Paranet UFO Continuum, and it deals with one of the most fascinating subjects around. Once again, here's your host, the director of Paranet Information Services, Michael Corbin.
And we're back. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk line tonight. 1-800-836-2009. Now, before we get on to our next guest, I want to bring up some points here. This program is supposed to be educational. I mean, that's the first and foremost reason why we do it. But the other is to give you information and let you know what's going on. But I myself, as you probably gathered from listening to me, I'm skeptical. I'm very skeptical. I don't buy into any one particular theory yet. But despite that fact, there's a lot of people that know what it is, and I say no, they don't know what it is. You know, since 1947. Which marked the advent of modern ufology. A lot of people have said, "Yeah, I know what it is," and you know, it's Space Brothers or it's this or it's that. It's not any of those things yet because we just don't have enough information. But I want to cover for you the things that we do know, and we call these the five principles of ufology. And I want to say they're global principles. James R. Black was a contributor of this article, and by the way, this appeared in one of our issues of Continuum, our official magazine of the Paranet Information Service. Basically, the first principle is there really is something extraordinary going on. Even the U.S. Air Force, for years the official guardians of the UFO scene, has occasionally admitted that UFOs are not to be entirely swept under the rug of hoaxes, hallucinations, or misidentifications. 1948, the estimate of the situation concluded, and that was a study that was done by the United States Air Force, that the UFOs were interplanetary spaceships. However, the top man in the Air Force batted that down and said, "I want this burned because there just isn't any way we could release this." But despite that, Blue Book personnel and other high-ranking Air Force employees such as J. Allen Hynek, Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, Edward Ruppelt, who was the first captain of Project Blue Book, all of these people believed that there was something going on. And this belief went all the way into the Condon study. So it's been long recognized by qualified observers that there is something real and unexplained at work here. And, of course, if you don't believe me, you can look at the Blue Book Special Report 14, which was actually produced by the Condon Committee. Despite the fact that they said there was nothing of any scientific value, they did acknowledge that there was something there. Now, the second principle is that it has been going on for a long time. Authors such as Jacques Vallée, Gordon Creighton, John Keel, and other veteran ufologists have demonstrated many of the features that we associate with modern UFO phenomena have been around for centuries. Of course, the ancient Romans and Egyptians saw flying shields, nocturnal lights. Pre-Christian inhabitants of Norway and Ireland were plagued with subterranean little people who were held responsible for adult abductions, child stealings, fairy circles, episodes of missing time, on and on and on. The people of medieval Europe saw ships sailing on the clouds, and they were assaulted in the night by incubi, succubi, night hags, and midnight warriors. And, of course, the wise men of the Renaissance were visited by men in black. The early scientists received secrets of mathematics and modern technology in dreams and visions. So as you can see, it goes on and on all the way up to the modern day that there has been something apparently interacting with people. Now, what we have in the 20th century, Fatima, apparitions, UFO reports, and abduction reports. The thing is, in the past, these phenomena have often been cloaked by the vocabularies and belief structures that are peculiar to each place and time, just as in our era of space travel and science fiction, that we are tempted to explain them by reference to spaceships and extraterrestrial races. But I say beneath all of these local variations, we can sense the same powers at work. There are actually several independent phenomena which are masquerading as each other. There is a tendency on the part of both believers and debunkers to lump all of the multifaceted UFO phenomena together and to demand a single, simple explanation for them all. That seems to be a human thing anyway, wanting to, explain everything, put a label to it. But when you have a cursory examination of the data, it fails to provide such an explanation. There is a strong temptation to either dismiss the whole package as nonsense, or you want to take and shoehorn the data into a pre-selected answer, whether it fits or not. And, of course, I know this better than anybody else, being, actively involved in this field of research for 6 years, that this is basically what you get at your doorstep. Somebody's interpretation of what it is, despite the fact that there still is just not enough evidence to put it into anything yet. The abduction phenomena, for example, or cattle mutilations committed by animal predators or religious cultists or even by covert governmental intelligence operations or, of course, by non-human entities, all these come in the night and disappear without a trace? No. These strange lights in the sky, are they caused by ball lightning, hoaxers tying flares to hot air balloons, lightning? There's a lot of different explanations for it. But there are different things going on here, and there's many facets to it. And it requires, for example, in each case, you could say the answer could well turn out to be all of the above and more. The fourth point is the phenomena is being covertly manipulated and exploited by human beings for their own purposes. This is my favorite. Opportunists and hoaxers, government agents, political extremists, religious cultists, all sorts of people are using UFOs as a cover for their real activities and intentions. Some are just out for a good time. Some might be seeking fame and fortune. Some are stretching the truth for the sake of a higher cause. But clearly, there are both individuals and organized conspiratorial groups that have latched onto the UFO phenomena as either a vehicle for their aspirations or a cover for something else. Jacques Vallée has reported on certain groups. I mean, there is just a number of them. Paranet was responsible for uncovering one. It was this group called the Phoenix Project in Reno, Nevada. It stunk to high heaven, and these people were hawking tapes and all kinds of things about an alleged UFO base in Northern California and around the Mount Shasta area. And, we discovered through an investigation that this was tied to a group that is known by a lot of people as George Green's Phoenix Liberator, which is just a bunch of rattle-trap brandings of a crazy person, I think. And, these guys are out making money or they have a political agenda or whatever. Billy Meyer is another one I'm real down on. Vallée has connected the Billy Meyer case to an Eastern Bloc intelligence organization. That does not dismiss the fact that there's something still out here going on. So, you know, we got to keep all that in mind. And, of course, you know, brainwashing, wallet draining and brainwashing are two of the favorite things that I see going on here. And this is the, you know, this is sad. Okay, the fifth and final point. A lot of people know more than they are telling. And, of course, there is ample evidence to demonstrate the existence of secret agendas, concealed truths in the field of ufology. Consider the continuing refusal of intelligence agencies to release their documents on UFOs. Consider the virtual media blackout on sensible UFO information and the amount of attention given instead to the most lurid and ridiculous kinds of tabloid hysteria. Consider cynical and sometimes almost desperate dissemination of nonsense, whether in the guise of leaked documents, the sudden advent of overly convenient witnesses, or the latest gibberish from the Pleiades. Some conceal the truth because they are afraid. Some in order to exploit the fears of the foolishness of others. Some simply because it's their job to do so. Whatever, it's not good. The bottom line here is, what are UFOs? We don't know. Who or what is really behind the phenomena? We don't know. Will the government of the world ever tell us, governments of the world ever tell us, you know, the whole truth? We don't know. So what's going on? What's going to happen next? We don't know. That's why we're doing this program. Okay, what we do know is that there really is something going on, and it's been around for a long time. It's a very complex and difficult thing to deal with and understand. It's being manipulated by human beings for very human purposes, and there are still a lot of people out there who aren't telling all they know. For those who care about the future of the human race, or even those who just like a good puzzle to work on, that ought to be enough to keep us going. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Paranet UFO Continuum is pleased to offer a number of exciting products. Cassette tapes of previous shows are available for $8 each, or two for $12, or four for $20. You can also order Paranet memberships, subscriptions to Continuum, Paranet's quarterly newsletter, and there's the UT1 UFO Tracker Kit, containing everything you need when you come across something unusual in the sky. Paranet, along with MICAP, the Multinational Investigations Cooperative on Aerial Phenomena, is pleased to offer a stunning black T-shirt with a background of galaxies, stars, and comets, the Paranet and MICAP logos, and a beautiful blue-green planet Earth. When you order from Paranet, you're helping to keep this program on the air. Call now to place an order or for more information at 1-800-UFO-NET-1. That's 1-800-UFO-6381. Paranet, your window on the universe, at 1-800-UFO-6381.
A lot of people think that to appreciate culture, you've got to enjoy things like this. Or this. In early Mesopotamia, evidence of the first audit exists in the form of lists on clay tablets. Well, a lot of people respond to those things like this. Fabulous. Other people go... Is it over? For those of you in the category, you can't expect every cultural activity to appeal to everybody. That's why 23,000 arts and humanities groups called the National Cultural Alliance are offering you something everybody likes, a choice! For a free brochure about what's going on in your community, just call 800-NCA-8888. A little redundant? That's okay. And then you could get excited about something like this. Oh, yeah. William Teletor. The arts and humanities. There's something in it for you. The National Cultural Alliance and the Ad Council invite you to explore what's available in your community. Just call 800-NCA-8888.
We'll be right back.
listening to the Paranet UFO Continuum. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, there's a lot about the subject you haven't heard. Stay tuned. Keep an open mind. Call in and join the discussion. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
It's like a powder. Now, man, it's great, Mike. I'm going to step off the laminate. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And that was history being made on July 20th, 1969, Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. Now, my guest tonight is Dr. Bruce Cornett. Bruce is a Bachelor of Arts in Biology from the University of Connecticut, as well as a Master of Science in Paleobotany at the same University of Connecticut. He has a PhD in Geology from Penn State University. He has quite an impressive background, and he is going to bring us up to speed on this recent discovery of artificial structures on the moon. Good evening, Bruce.
Good evening, Michael. How are you today?
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing just fine. Right now we're getting a little bit of a thunderstorm at my end, so if you hear some banging in the background, that's what it is.
Okay. Hope you don't get electrocuted on the phone. Bruce, tell us a little bit. Now, before we get started, I want you to know I am a very skeptical person on this, but I do realize that Richard Hoagland has done some very good work on the Mars anomalies. Now, what's happening on the moon? What's going on over there now?
Okay. Richard has discovered what I think might be one of the biggest discoveries in mankind's history, based on some indications that really started, evidence that started with his study, the Cydonia complex on Mars. And this is a very unusual crater called Oort Crater in the center or near the center of Sinus Medii, the large dark area at the very center of the moon's disk. And
that's visible from Earth, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's mainly through a Earth telescope photograph that he saw this evidence that there is this crater about 18 miles in diameter that has an equilateral triangle outlined within its center that becomes apparent when the sun is reflecting or pointed directly, when the sun is directly over that crater and you're getting direct reflection back out of it.
Now, Bruce, let me ask you real quick. I'm curious. How long, I mean, we know that astronomers have been looking at the moon with telescopes for years. How come all of a sudden this is just coming out?
I don't know that it is just coming out.
Okay.
There have been transient phenomena of these unusual bright flashes noted on the moon for centuries, ever since Galileo first started studying the moon with his telescope.
Okay, and I have a copy of that, which is a very interesting document that does come from NASA, as Dr. Cornett has mentioned, that does detail an unusually high number of unusual lunar light phenomena, as well correct me if I'm wrong, Dr. Cornett, but something about seeing smoke and vapors as well, right?
There have been strange things reported there that we just don't have any good answer for.
Okay, all right.
Now, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, our connection might be interrupted, but as I was saying, one of the main things that was derived from the study of the Cydonia complex was that there is this geometry in relationship to a tetrahedron within a sphere, which in a two-dimensional representation would be an equilateral triangle within a circle. And whether or not this is exactly what we have here in Oort Crater is secondary to the fact that it caught Richard's interest, and he began wondering whether or not this was an artificially constructed to catch our attention, because it is located directly in the center, directly over the Earth, the closest part of the moon to the Earth, and anybody who would look up at the moon would perhaps start looking at it closely in the center.
Now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
And when he discovered this photograph, he recognized that this might represent this universal symbol, and have been intentionally put there to get people to look around more closely to see what else might be there, which he did.
Now, for our listeners who don't know what this universal symbol thing is, Hoagland is talking about the finding a mathematical relationship to the structure on Cydonia, the face, and et cetera, et cetera. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. What does that mean in lay terms?
Okay. Basically, that one of the most common forms of communication that would be independent of language would be the language of geometry and science. Those things do not change. They're immutable. They're common to any culture or any intelligence.
They're universal no matter where they are in the universe, right?
That's right. If you wanted to create a symbol that would have some meaning, this is one of the kinds of symbols that you might create in order to indicate that there had been an intelligence involved in its making.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009. 1-800-836-2009. My guest tonight is Dr. Bruce Cornett. He is a geologist and paleontologist?
Yes.
Okay, paleontologist. Now, Dr. Cornett, according to your report, these discoveries or these things that you yourself have been personally involved in,
yes,
originate with photographs, apparently from what I'm looking at here, a lunar orbiter photograph from February of 1967, something from Apollo 10 in May of 69. Is this where you're getting this this picture?
Yes, these are, the data is coming from the specific photographs from the Surveyor 6, from the Apollo 10, and from the Orbiter 3. These are so far the photographs that were found to contain anomalous objects or features on them, and since then we have found many other photographs that are also showing or confirming these same structures.
So now there's more than just this one area.
Much more.
Give us a little bit of something about a 5 mile high structure.
Okay, a little bit of a background. The Orbiter 3 photograph shows a very unusual structure.
Okay.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
By the way, I can hear that thunder in the background.
Oh, yes.
Sounds pretty awesome.
Every once in a while I hear a click and I don't know if we're still connected.
Yeah.
He has dubbed it or given it the name the Shard. And it caught his attention because it is a vertical structure that rises above the moon's surface. It's in the distance in this particular photograph, 84M. And it's near the horizon, not quite at the horizon. Is that based on calculations? It's about 250 miles away from the camera at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also based on trigonometry, he was able to determine that this structure rose at least 1.5 miles above the surface, and it casts a very prominent shadow that reflects the same shape out of the object, which is somewhat irregular. Spindly shape, but with swellings and nodes on it. And he got a very, a second generation negative from Goddard, and through the help of his photographic expert, and enlarged that portion of the negative and did a whole series of contrast slices. One of the problems with the lunar pictures is that the surface of the moon is so reflective that in order to bring a detail out, you have to adjust for that contrast,
okay.
That high contrast on the surface.
All right, Dr. Cornett, we have to break. Go to a break here real quick. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about what your theory is about what's going on up there.
Sure.
Okay? 1-800-836-2009 is our call-in number. Dr. Bruce Cornett is my guest on the Paranet UFO Continuum. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm Michael Corbin. See you in a moment.
Get the latest UFO news delivered right to your door with Continuum, the official quarterly publication of Paranet Information Services. Continuum offers a serious look at the world of ufology through hard news reports, and interesting and provocative interviews with leading ufologists and investigators. There's a source and resource section to help you locate information on UFOs, plus much, much more. Each issue is also packed with information from the Paranet Information Services International Communications Network. So be informed with this comprehensive publication. Subscribe now and receive 5 issues for the price of 4. Send check or money order for $18 to Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. That's Continuum, Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Do it now.
Pilots, when you fly, you need convenient, accurate information for safe flight and landing operations, as well as local businesses that provide you with the services and treatment you deserve. The Skyway Publications Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides are what you need. These are free, pocket-sized guides giving you information about large and small airports all over the country. Information like radio frequencies, runway systems, coordinates, and taxiways, as well as fuel and aircraft services provided at the airport, and local businesses catering to private pilots. It's yours free. Ask the fixed base operator at your favorite stops to carry the Skyway Airport Directory and Entertainment Guides, or call area 303-669-1800. Skyway Publications, your ticket to safer, cheaper, and more convenient flight. Talk to the FBO at your favorite destinations or call Skyway Publications at area 303-669-1800.
Are UFOs for real, or are they just fiction? To find out, stay with us for more of the Paranet UFO Continuum with your host, Michael Corbin.
And we return. My guest is Dr. Bruce Cornett. He's a geologist and paleontologist. And Dr. Cornett has been working with Richard Hoagland on the moon structures that they're finding, apparently artificial structures. Now, Dr. Cornett, where or who could have put those there?
Based on the amount of damage that we see, part of these, in other words, we're dealing with structures that are clearly, have been bombarded by an enormous number of meteorites of various sizes over an enormous amount of time. Mm-hmm. The amount of, damage is considerable. From the indications of the, structures that are anywhere from 3 to 5 miles above the surface of the moon, it indicates that we may have had a very large geodetic type of dome, six-sided dome over a number of different areas on the moon, and that they were constructed quite complexly with many, many tiers of rebar-type structure and glass having been hung on this type of structure. And through meteorite bombardment, very little of this glass remains, but fragments or shards of this glass still cling to it, and it's visible in many of the Apollo and orbiter photographs that fly over the Sinus Medii, for example. And we have confirmed this through photographs from different angles, different flights, different altitudes, even from the surface, Surveyor 6 photographs. This stuff seems to be apparent. And also, we also have an explanation as to why the Surveyor 4 suddenly disappeared without with any signal attenuation.
Wait a minute. Surveyor 4, is this another story like the Mars Observer?
No, this is one of the first attempts to land a robotic device on the moon by the United States. And this landing was to occur in Sinus Medii. And on the descent, within 5 seconds before landing, as it approached, it was about 5 miles high or so, and it was coming down, suddenly it disappeared. When you plot the trajectory of that descending craft and its altitude at the time where it was last known to be, it's right on target with one of these very large tower-like structures. That was one of the support structures
to
the
stone. So you're postulating that it hit the structure.
Exactly.
I see. And it's very interesting. This is all very incredible. Now, how come, I mean, we just played this tape from Neil Armstrong standing on the moon. How come we've never heard anything of this, and despite the fact that there have been humans on the moon and have been there?
Okay, well, if you consider some of the statements that have come from the Apollo astronauts, that they have seen this veil-like, shimmering gauze-like material above the surface, in the sky above the surface of the moon, and seen these reflections of glints of flashes coming from not only above the surface but even above the spacecraft at times, and then looks at the photographs, one can see these reflections, these specular reflections off some sort of a reflective material, and in successive photographs, one taken right after another, you can see that these structures in stereo vision are indeed above the moon, and they are physical objects that are reflecting light.
Now, how
did they get there?
Yeah, let me ask you this real quick. I mean, you're going to tell me, but I want to say your background is very impressive. I mean, how did you get involved in this?
I mean, I enjoy puzzles.
Okay.
All right. I enjoy geologic puzzles.
I understand you met Hoagland at a conference.
At a conference, yes. And then a mutual friend suggested that I might be interested in getting involved with him, and I didn't know anything about him until I saw his tapes, and I was very impressed with the kind of work he does. His work is very thorough, and even though people may not agree with all of his interpretations, his methodology is sound.
Okay, so as a scientist, you are absolutely convinced that what you're saying is true.
Yes, there is something there of enormous magnitude that cannot be just wished away or denied.
Okay. 1-800-836-2009 is our call and talk line. 1-800-836-2009. Dr. Cornett, where do these come from?
Well, if the estimates of their age are anything in the ballpark, you're talking about structures in possible cities, evidence of buildings, actually, whole cities of rows of buildings on the moon that we also see in photographs. You're talking about things that are at least several hundred million years old.
Jeez, that's mind-boggling.
I mean, what we seem to have is perhaps evidence of some sort of a visiting group of beings that colonized the moon, and why they colonized the moon is anybody's guess, but they, based on my understanding, and I'm a geologist, paleontologist, understand the history of life on this Earth, we know, for example, that around 500 to 600 million years ago, there was an incredible revolution of life on Earth. For billions of years, the seas were just filled with simple unicellular life. And nothing spectacular happened. And then suddenly, within a period of less than 50 million years, we had all of the major types of plants, animals, and fungi evolving.
Okay.
And
all of a sudden, we're here.
Right. We don't
know
why that started.
Sure.
Of course, there are many different explanations to it. But the most, this tantalizing possibility, and this is pure speculation, is that if these things on the moon are real, and they do date back from approximately that period of time, maybe life on this Earth got a jump start.
Okay, we're going to take a break. 1-800-836-2009. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Grab a pen and get ready to copy down a computer address. It's an email address where you can reach the Paranet Information Services BBS through America Online. With America Online's Internet Gateway, you can send us mail and we can respond to you personally through your America Online screen name. With America Online's Usenet Newsgroup tie-in, you can also access the 7 Paranet newsgroups dealing with UFOs, metaphysics, paranormal activity, and others. Learn about our upcoming shows and pose questions in advance. And if your question is selected, you'll get a free cassette copy of the show. You'll also find summaries of past shows. If you're not already a customer of America Online, call 1-800-827-6364 for more information. Now, here's that email address to reach us. It's paranet@aol.com or paranet@paranet.org. America Online and Paranet, a winning combination.
If one of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 100,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? If 1,000,000 of us voted in this election, would anybody listen? To the sound of a younger voice, to the sound of a younger hand, they would listen. Get out and vote. They would listen. They would listen.
A message brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the Paranet UFO Continuum, a weekly program dedicated to the mysterious and fascinating world of UFOs. If you're interested in learning more about Paranet, the world's foremost communications network dealing with the UFO phenomena, call us at area 303-429-2654 or write to Box 172, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80034. Once again, here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And we're back with my guest, Dr. Bruce Cornett. And we're going to go immediately to John in Santa Cruz, California. Good evening, John.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very good program as usual.
Thank you.
I have two questions for Dr. Cornett. Number one, is there a way that I could get a hold of a copy of that paper that you put out on Paranet?
Yes, there is. In fact, if Michael will give out my address, send me a request, and I'll return it.
Great.
Okay. What's your second question, John? We got to wrap up here real quick.
Then will you give the address? Yeah. Okay. The second question is about the Clementine Project. I saw the video by Richard Hoagland. It was very interesting, but I was surprised to hear that the Clementine resolution of the camera on the Clementine mission was not really as great as the previous mission. So I was wondering what might we be able to learn from the Clementine mission about these structures?
Well, the high-resolution camera that is almost as good as that of the high-resolution Apollo and Orbiter shots has already revealed some very interesting things in a crater on the far side of the moon. NASA surprisingly released one of these photos from Chant Crater on their electronic bulletin board. And
did they say whoops when they did that?
Who knows who did it, but it shows an enormous tower structure supporting a superstructure like that of a dome, and in great detail. And, of course, they've come up and say, oh, no, it's not there. It's just your imagination. It's an artifact, blah, blah.
Dr. Cornell, I'm curious to know, have you experienced or do you anticipate getting some of the heavy fire that Richard Hoagland and the others who have been instrumental in bringing the Mars story to the public, do you expect that to happen to you?
Oh, sure. I mean, why not? There are a lot of people out there who would like to continue to think that they understand this world the way it is.
Why don't they want us to know? What are they hiding from us? I mean, is there something? What are they hiding from us?
There's a report called the Brookings Report that Hoagland talks about, and in it, a lot of good reasons why people in the government would want to keep this kind of information secret. They're afraid of the kind of reactions that will happen, particularly among religious groups, if it became known and established this fact that there are other life forms in this universe.
Why is, I hear this all over and over again. What is religion and all this stuff? What are they afraid of? What's going to happen if we find out that there's intelligent life out there?
My feeling is that a lot of it is just unfounded fear, because there was a recent survey done. I can't give you the exact quotes on it. That was done for religious leaders and priests and ministers, getting more and more detailed information on asking more questions on what if this were done or this were discovered. And it turned out that in the final analysis, the majority of them said it would not change their beliefs at all.
Yeah, so maybe we should, figure out why they're looking at it this way. Listen, we're going to have to wrap up the program. Give out your address for Brother John and as well as our other listeners so they can know how to get a hold of you.
Sure. It's Dr. Bruce Cornett, 27 Tower Hill Avenue, 3 words, Red Bank, 2 words, New Jersey, 07701.
Okay. Okay. And listen, I want to thank you very much for weathering that thunderstorm that you had there tonight. I probably would like to have you back on for another program in the future to get an update, because I'm sure your work is going to continue. I'd be interested to know what else you might discover.
Well, one of the things that's important is that there's a videotape out by BC Video that is on Richard Hoagland's talk at Ohio State University. It's a 3-hour
tape. I've got it here. It's The Moon Mars Connection.
Yes.
If you folks want to get a hold of a copy of it, you can call toll free 1-800-424-0031, and that's BC Video in Southern Burlington, Vermont. And I've got a copy of this tape, and it's pretty interesting. Thank you very much, Dr. Bruce Cornett, and we'll be talking to you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Okay, that wraps up another edition of the Paranet UFO Continuum. Sounds kind of strange, doesn't it? Sounds like it's been right there in front of our noses for a long time, but we haven't realized it. Okay, next week we're going to have Shelley Thompson. She is going to talk to us about remote viewing of alien species. Very interesting program, very interesting person. So we hope you'll stay tuned, and we'll see you next week. Until then, as James Nichol might say, it's nice to have an open mind, but not as open as, say, a refuse can. I'm Michael Corbin. We'll see you next Sunday night. Good evening.